Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
A new year, a sigh of relief for financial markets. 2007 was one big roller coaster. How about the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ all resolved to bring us high returns and low volatility? How soon till that resolution goes by the wayside? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Siemens, from generators that power cities to light bulbs for homes, from factory automation to medical diagnostics. Siemens 70,000 U.S. employees providing solutions for America.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. It is the first day of January in the year 2008. Happy New Year, everyone. If you were with us yesterday, you know Wall Street ended the year on a sour note. In fact, the month of December saw some of the same wild swings we experienced throughout 2007. Record highs with the Dow topping 14,000. And then, of course, all those downward spirals because of the housing bust and credit crunch. But not everyone is weeping their way into the new year. Turns out 07 was a banner year for clean energy. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
Record oil prices may not be so good for the pocketbook, but for companies developing clean energy alternatives, near $100 a barrel oil is a godsend. Oil prices closed the year 60% higher. That may help explain why venture capital investors poured $2.6 billion into clean tech startups in the first 9 months of 2007. That's a 45% increase from last year. But Joel McCower of GreenBiz.com says investing in the sector isn't for the faint of heart.
Just like any other technology sector, this is going to have fits and starts and bubbles and bursts.
He says overheated investment is starting to take the air out of the much-hyped ethanol boom. Shares in solar companies have also had a bumpy ride. But there are some rising stars. Innovations in energy efficiency attracted a big share of last year's clean tech capital. Solar thermal technology, which concentrates the sun's heat to run turbines, has also garnered a lot of attention. And it's not just venture capitalists and startups. McCower says big-name corporations are getting into the game as well.
New energy companies are not utilities and oil companies anymore. They're companies like United Technologies and GE, IT companies like Cisco and IBM, financial services companies like Goldman Sachs, which is one of the largest wind turbine developers in the world.
Despite all the activity and excitement around the green technology sector, it may still be too early to call it mainstream, especially as lawmakers in Washington failed to pass renewable energy mandates for utilities as part of the new energy bill. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Wall Street took the day off to recover from last night's festivities, but we'll take a look at how the rest of the world fared in 2007 when we do the numbers. Have you decided on your resolutions for this year? Any of them have to do with your finances? Mine do. I vow that our family will do a complete home inventory, put electronic copies of all of our important financial papers in a safe place. And I'm also resolved to invest in the stock market for the first time in my life, not just through my retirement plan, but hopefully through an investment club, because one of the biggest lessons I learned in 2007 is that it is eminently doable. Throughout 2007, I made several visits to the women of formerly Baroque, their investment club in Virginia. 12 ladies in their 50s and 60s who meet once a month to talk stocks.
A group of women decided that they didn't know very much about finances, and a lot of our women were single, either divorced or widowed.
And that's, I think, one of the last holdouts for women getting into finances, getting into investing. This is an area women really need to get savvy in.
So true. Now, the caveat here is that most personal finance gurus will tell you to invest only in index funds. They're certainly safer than individual stocks, but I'm ready to take a little more risk in the name of learning the machinations of the market. These women beat the pants off the S&P 500 last year with gains of more than 10% in their portfolio as of November. Their meetings were an incredible education in how to take something that's scary and foreign to so many of us and turn it into profits. Over the course of the year, they discussed things like the Baltic Dry Index, market orders versus limit orders, the sinking dollar, how to take advantage of it. More than anything, they proved that it pays to do your homework.
All right, review of our positions. I have Crocs. I did their chart. It's one of those, you know, that just needs to be watched. It's going to go up and down and up and down.
Yes, charts and graphs. Doesn't sound like much fun, but put a few hours a week into it, and it is amazing what you soak up. The club bought stock in Crocs back last January, based on research, but also on the fact that they just plain loved those ugly plastic shoes. Several members wore them. Their grandchildren wore them. So they bought the stock at about $24 a share and sold most of it in September around $65 a share, just before the stock tanked. They didn't have that kind of luck with all of their investments, but they were okay with that. Through the ups and downs, the club listened in on earnings calls, updated each other on CEO statements, followed the Fed, and bought and sold based on everything but gut feeling. They laughed when the person most devastated by their Crocs sale was me.
You're going to sell Crocs?
Well, that's the problem.
See, that's fall in love with these stocks, and being women, I think we get emotionally attached. I don't know.
More than anything, what the ladies taught me was that investment can be fun, especially when you're in it with other people. The club even bought a little bit of Google stock at almost $600 a share just to see what it was like to own a Wall Street darling. They're in it to learn, and in the process, they've managed to make money and teach some lessons I'll be using this year. If you'd like to hear more of those lessons, we've got the entire Investment Club series on our website. It's marketplace.org. The 2000 saw its share of natural disasters, floods in the Midwest, raging wildfires in Idaho and California. Are you ready for the next disaster? You do know that it can happen anywhere. Hurricane Katrina was one of the biggest lessons in being financially ready for the worst. Marketplace's Sam Eaton visited New Orleans for the second anniversary back in August. He found three lifelong residents who returned after the storm with a newfound sense of how to prepare for the next one.
I'm Yashika Jordan, the owner and director of Jordan's Learning Academy in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I've been back in New Orleans since August 15, 2006. I've been here my whole life.
My name is Mike Butler, and my brother and I own the Venice Marina here in Venice, Louisiana. Venice is the little point that sticks out into the Gulf, and we're the last drivable place that you can go in further south in Louisiana.
You have a good day.
My name's Henry McCluskey, and I own Zito's Plating and Polishing Works in New Orleans. I've lived here all my life, and but we've been in business for 60-some-odd years.
I will never forget this. I didn't have anything with me because I didn't think that it was going to happen the way it did.
There are a lot of things that you don't count on after the storm. One is you didn't count on the fact that you were going to be out of your business for 9 months. We had a rainy day fund. We had some money set aside. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to have a financial plan where when I got to be 55 years old, I didn't have to worry about retirement. Well, Katrina, she kind of had a little different perspective on that.
That was the amazing part of it, was when you came back in and you seen the damage, what water does, you know, I don't know, you know. But when we finally got back in here, it was a total loss.
I left every checkbook I had there. I had left my debit card there. I left bank statements. I left everything at the house because I thought I was only going to be gone for a day.
The reality after the storm, what you don't realize is that all the banks were shut down. ATMs, nothing worked. The only thing worked was greenbacks.
We didn't have insurance, so we knew when I got back here, there wasn't no use to sit down and cry about it because we don't have a lot of money. And I said, you know, we got to get back. Let's get this place open. You know, either we're going to float and go through with it or we're going to drown.
If another hurricane was to hit New Orleans and we were pre-warned about it, I would take every dime I had out of the bank. I purchased a safe, and inside that safe contains everything from my bank statements, my cards, everything that I need, so that if I had to evacuate again, I would take that safe, and it's like I won't lose nothing.
You know, my wife's got her file cabinet. She's to the point now where she knows she's got that one folder that has all our important papers in it. And we'll scoop it up, and she'll be taking that with her. You know, we done lost all that once before, you know. She's not going to go through that again, you know.
You know, every year since when we bought the business, except for last year, we had to evacuate for a storm. So you always knew that the risk was there, but you didn't realize that the scope of things changed. And you don't factor in those escalating costs after the storm because it was so widespread.
Everybody says, you know, I'm crazy because I tell them what I'm saying. I don't feel like I'm crazy because if it was theirs, they would probably do the same thing, you know, because I know how hard I work and I know how hard it is to get what you got, and it's so easy to lose it.
Katrina was a blessing to me because I didn't have this attitude before, and I should have had this attitude. I wasn't business-oriented. I wasn't caring if I had a dime or not. I just was spending my money every day. It didn't matter if I was broke. And now it's not like that. Now I'm looking for more businesses to open and finding more things that the city needs that I can help and open this business for the city so we can have it here. So Katrina has really, really, really changed me.
Voices from New Orleans last August on the second anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Coming up, a banker turned jazz singer scales unexpected heights.
It wasn't like I had this dream all along that one day I was going to start singing. I really did think that I was just too old to start.
But first, let's do the numbers. Major markets are closed today to mark the start of 2008. As we mentioned before, it was a rough year for U.S. stocks thanks to the subprime mess. But 2007 really belonged to the foreign exchanges. Billions of dollars flowed out of the developed world and into so-called emerging markets and beyond. Jakarta's JSX index jumped 52% for the year. The Bombay Stock Exchange ended the year up 47%. And the Shanghai Composite Index climbed 96.7% for the year, by far the best performing market of 2007. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Marketplace aims to be insightful and provocative. And if you send our stories along, you can be too. Log on to our website and forward any story you hear. Every day's rundown is there, along with transcripts of the show and links to individual pieces. It's at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at the events for Wednesday. The parties have ended and the parade has passed through. Time to get back to work. It's the real start of the new year. The Fiesta Bowl takes place in Glendale, Arizona. West Virginia goes up against Oklahoma. And in 1959, the Soviet Union launched the spacecraft Luna 1. the first to orbit the sun. I'm Megan Larson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglund in for Kai Rizdahl. Night owls rejoice. The cadre of late night comedians is back as of tomorrow night. Letterman, Leno, Conan et al. Are returning to the airwaves 2 months after the Hollywood writers' strike shut down production. The Late Show with David Letterman, however, is the only one going on the air with its writers. Letterman's production company signed a side deal with the Writers Guild. Meanwhile, the rest of TV land is in limbo with no new talks scheduled to settle the strike. Scott Collins writes about television for the Los Angeles Times. And Scott, I'm guessing that we're going to be subjected to a slew of reruns and reality shows over the next few months.
You're going to see a lot of reruns. It won't be entirely reruns. There will be a few new shows. Fox, for instance, has Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is going to be the TV version of the James Cameron movie. And you're going to see a lot of reality shows. NBC will have American Gladiators. So you'll see, you know, a lot of those things. And, of course, you'll have American Idol.
So what does that mean for advertisers? If they've bought time on the other networks and American Idol is the only big behemoth show that's on, you know, Fox, what happens to the money that advertisers already spent on shows that they thought were going to be on the air?
Right. Well, you know, the advertisers, as you know, buy a lot of the inventory, the ad inventory, in bulk before the season ever begins. So this is an issue. So far, it's an unresolved issue for the most part, because nobody knows if the networks will underdeliver on their audience promises for the rest of the season.
But it's a pretty safe bet that they will, isn't it? I mean, especially for reruns.
It's a network by network case. No one can really say.
Yeah.
For instance, Fox, will Fox do even better than expected because of competitors having more repeats than usual? You know, it's particularly difficult for ABC because they have a number of very widely watched scripted dramas. You know, Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy. So they're in a particularly risky spot with the strike. I think if you look at the five broadcast networks generally, yeah, they're probably going to take a pretty tough hit on the chin here.
So does that mean that they actually have to pay back advertisers?
Yes, and that's what NBC has, in fact, already done, which happens very, very rarely. You know, usually in the television business, when the audience estimate underdelivers, we're talking about make goods. In other words, free ads that kind of make the advertiser whole. What's happened, or what's beginning to happen, is you're having networks like NBC saying, maybe what we should do is just return some of the money.
Now let's talk about the impact further on of this strike that's been out there about 8 weeks or so at this point. This means it's now going to affect pilot season, right?
Yeah, I think it would definitely have to affect a pilot season. I mean, we're already to the point now where the strike has lasted so long that the networks and the studios would really be behind the eight ball in getting pilot scripts in shape for what is usually the pilot season schedule.
At what point, if the strike just keeps going on and keeps going on, will we literally run out of original shows?
The expiration date for scripted programming is really not that far off in the future. Mm. I mean, we're going to be pretty much at the bottom of the cupboard probably by March.
All right. Well, perhaps that'll be when it's time to pick up a good book.
That's
Scott
right.
Collins is the TV columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Holiday shopping season is blessedly over. You know what that means. The credit card bill is in the mail. Retailers are moaning over the fact that sales from Thanksgiving to Christmas only rose 3.6% over last year, but they still rose, and that means we all probably spent more than we should have. So next time you go out with your friends, will you share with them that you're clamping down on your own spending? Commentator Shira Boss says a lot of us would profit from talking about our money issues.
Money is known as the last taboo. We're more likely to know about our friends taking antidepressants than to know about their dreaded credit card balances. Why is this? Well, as my eighth grade teacher used to say about a lot of things, it's rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. But since we seem to have lost our manners in many other areas, why be so proper when it comes to personal finances? I think it comes down to fear. If we ask, we might have to tell. We might have to admit that we're in financial trouble. We're also afraid of not fitting in. Who wants to be the one who speaks up at a group dinner and says, "I'd rather not order wine, actually"? Why does it seem like everyone else can always afford it? The fact is, anxiety over money is much more common than we realize. More Americans are going bankrupt than are getting divorced. But bankrupt families can't find one another and talk it out because we're too ashamed to admit money trouble. So why not break the money taboo? It's only adding to our stress. Let's speak up about our envy, be honest about what we can't afford, and wonder out loud how our neighbors paid for that weekend trip to Paris. I like to put it as, "Wow, how long did you have to save up for that?" Open the door a bit and see what you find out. Even if it's just a look on their faces that tells you they hadn't saved, you're likely to learn that you're not alone. After all, 70% of us report living paycheck to paycheck. At least you'll discover the relief of honesty and often get a reality check. That's a way we can improve our financial well-being even before we make more money or pay off all our debts.
Shira Boss is the author of the book Green with Envy. Tell us if you are. Just go to marketplace.org and click on contact. The new year is often a time of reflection on just how our lives are going. In addition to all those resolutions, we ask questions like, am I happy? Do I like my job? Well, even if you love your job, don't tell me you've never dreamed about ditching it and going off to paint or dance or sing, maybe even get paid for it. Today, special correspondent Joe Giese introduces us to a woman who did just that.
Renee Marie married young, at 18, and while her two boys were little, she took part-time jobs to supplement her husband's income.
I was a cashier at a grocery store. I did janitorial work for my husband's business. I cleaned the houses of affluent women. My perspective of it was money is money, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time away from my sons.
When her boys were teenagers, Renee got a full-time job at the First Union Bank in Roanoke, Virginia. She worked her way up from sitting at the desk doing customer service to training customer service reps. But she always liked to sing, mostly just around the house. But even at the bank, the singer in Renee could not be contained.
I'm one of those people that you either get enjoyment out of listening to sing all the time, or you stop up your ears and say, "I wish she would shut up."
Renee remembers one time in particular when she belted out the theme to Gilligan's Island.
My boss was a very serious-minded person. And at the very last verse of Gilligan's Island, he comes out of his office and he gestures with his left arm and he goes, "Here on Gilligan's Isle." And I felt that that was a real accomplishment for me.
She'd been working at the bank for 5 years and enjoying it more and more as she moved up the ladder. That's when a call came from her son that changed the direction of her career.
My son goes to this restaurant, and he calls me from the restaurant saying, "Mom, this woman is singing the songs that you sing at home all the time, and she's nowhere near as good as you." Out of curiosity, I go. And it was when I sat down at the table and we were listening to her, and I was saying to him, "Man, I can't believe she's getting paid for this."
On the spot, her son became her career counselor.
My son says, "Mom, I've seen you do this at home with a carrot in your hand. That's your microphone." He says, "You were made to do this." That's how it got started. It wasn't like I had this dream all along that one day I was going to start singing. I really did think that I was just too old to start.
At 40 years old, Renee started over. At first, she scrambled to do everything at once. She worked at the bank, she borrowed $3,000 from her mom to record a CD, and she did gigs. Things started to click.
Welcome to the Jazz Standard, y'all. Thank you so much for coming.
But how did she finally make the decision to leave the security of the bank and that nice, steady paycheck to become self-employed?
My brother kept telling me to jump and the net will appear.
She jumped and turned in her 2 weeks' notice.
My coworkers were congratulating me, you know, did you get a record deal? And the answer was no. There were no bright prospects facing me the next week.
But then the net appeared.
3 days later, I got a phone call from a theater in Richmond, Virginia, and they were desperate to hire a vocalist for 10 weeks.
Do I want to? Oh my, do I? Honey, deed I do.
That started Renee on her way.
Do I need you? Oh my, I said do I, honey, deed I do.
Today she's at work in Atlanta, rehearsing with her pianist, Takana Miyamoto. She's wearing black spiked leather boots, a black leather jacket, a red T-shirt. A far cry from the pumps and pantyhose of her banking days.
So is that what you're playing? No. Is what I wrote?
No, that's what I thought is more commonly.
Well, we don't want to do the common thing.
No. No.
So
this
what
is
it?
How does it feel now to make your living as a jazz singer versus working in a bank?
It's a lot scarier. What I'm actually able to put in my wallet at the end of the day is half of what I was earning. That's the price of freedom.
After 5 years as a professional, Renee Marie has a record contract with Max Jazz. She's produced 3 CDs. She's played most of the major jazz festivals and clubs, and she's made several appearances at the Kennedy Center.
How can I keep from singing?
I'm Joe Giese for Marketplace.
What a difference a day made. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, is heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made. And the difference is you.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of a well-diversified college savings plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And this final note, smog readings in the Italian financial capital of Milan often top the charts for the European Union. So this year, Milanos will shell out euros to breathe a little easier. Drivers headed to the city's center will have to pay a pollution charge beginning tomorrow. The fee is being billed as the first of its kind in Europe. Milan's EcoPass is being launched as a one-year trial. Officials hope it'll serve as a model to other cities. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media on this New Year's Day. The markets were closed today for the holiday. Thanks to Renita Jablonski and Miguel Macias on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by John Buckley. Next time on the program, putting a price on preservation.
We lose about 50 acres a day of natural lands to development of one sort or another.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.